Okay, so before Pesach, we finished up the aftermath of the Korach story when the Jews challenged Moshe again. And then, according to the simplest understanding of the story, the next time we pick up the narrative in Parshat Chukat, we are 40 years later. We are 40 years later. And the Torah never really tells you that, so it's not actually 100% clear that what I just said is true. But the majority of the Mefarshim, will come to those who challenge it in just a minute, think that we are now we're 40 years in. Perek Yotet is the laws of Parah Aduma, which I've always sort of thought of as the symbolic bridge between the first half of Bamidbar and the second half, because like I said, the pasuk doesn't tell you they all die. It just, you know, you hear nothing. They complain, they say we're all going to die, and then nothing, and then you get Parah Aduma, and then you wake up and it's 40 years later. Now Parah Aduma, which deals with the laws of how do you purify people from who've come in contact with the dead, is sort of a good symbolic way. If you don't want to say, and everybody died, and then you arose with a new generation, instead you put in a mitzvah that talks about how do you heal yourself spiritually after coming in contact with the dead, which at the macro level is really what the Jewish people are going through. They've just lost a generation, and now it's the new generation who's now purified, and and that's who we meet in Perek Chaf. So in Perek Chaf, we get what is one of the most sort of unclear stories in the Chumash, which is the story which leads to Moshe not being allowed to go into Israel. But it starts off in Pasuk Chaf, Perek Chaf, Pasuk Aleph. I put it on the sheets, whatever, you know. ויבואו בני ישראל כל העדה מדבר צין בחודש הראשון וישב העם בקדש ותמת שם מרים ותיקבר שם. So the nation comes to the desert Tzin in the first month, and they stay there, and Miriam dies and she's buried there.
When do we know for sure that we're in the 40th year?
A little bit later. I mean,
later.
Yeah. I mean, pretty much everyone assumes we're in the 40th year because Miriam dies, and you know, we're in Midbar. We're already in Midbar Tzin, and the only person who really doesn't think that that's where we are is the I'll put it out there now. The next parasha is pretty clear. We're towards the end by Balak. We're pretty much towards the end. They're approaching Israel, and the countries around Israel are panicking, and that's year 40. The only Mefarish who really doesn't think this is year 40 is the Bechor Shor. The Bechor Shor is, we mentioned this a long time ago when we did the flip story. The Bechor Shor is totally thrown off by the fact that in Shemot, we have three stories about complaints of water, and complaints of food, and complaints of water again, and then here we have complaints of water and complaints of food, right? Bamidbar has all these complaints of the man, and that he just assumes that they're the same story. He just assumes that Shemot gave you the short hand of the story, and then Bamidbar dispels out the details. But they didn't happen twice. And therefore, he just assumes that the stories all happened earlier. So according to him, this is not the 40th year. When exactly it's not clear. This is the second complaint for water that was mentioned in Beshalach, which was anticipated, but it's somewhere in the middle of the 40 years. We don't know when. It's, you know, somewhere after year 2 and sometime before year 40. But everyone else assumes this is year 40. That, you know, we're right at the end. So Miriam dies. And now they don't have water. And this is where Chazal get the notion that this isn't, these aren't accidentally connected. It's not just that Miriam dies and they don't have water, but it's Miriam died, and therefore they didn't have water, because it was in her merit that they had the Be'er Shel Miriam. And they say to Moshe, if only we had died with our brothers. Now, this line, I think, is loaded with a lot more meaning than people, I think, give it credit for. But let's continue to his sin. But let's hold this pasuk in mind, because the Jews, as they've done before, complain to him. Why did you bring the congregation of God to the desert to die? Us or animals? And why did you bring us from Mitzrayim to this place? Why did you take us out of Mitzrayim to bring us to this horrible place, which doesn't have seed and doesn't have figs and grapes and pomegranates, and there's no water? So they come to the Ol Moed and they fall on their face, and God's presence appears to them. So Hashem tells Moshe, so God says, take the stick, take the nation, you and Aaron, and go and speak to the rock, and it will give of its water, and you'll take from the water. You'll take water from the rock, and you'll feed the nation and their animals. So Moshe takes the stick as he's supposed to. Moshe and Aaron take them to the rock, and they say, listen, O rebels, are we going to take water from this rock for you? And Moshe lifts his hand, and Moshe strikes the rock twice, and water comes out, a lot of water comes out, and the nation drinks. Because you didn't believe in me, you didn't have faith in me to sanctify my name to the Jewish people, I won't bring you into Israel. These are the waters of strife, where the Bnei Israel contended with God, and he was sanctified there. And this is, you know, this becomes the moment where, according to the simple read of the Sukkim, Moshe, it's decreed that Moshe won't go into Israel. And the Mepharshim try to figure out, what did he do? What was it that Moshe did that was so bad? And that question is compounded. First of all, it's compounded simply because one, you have the problem of why is the sin that he did so bad, right? Two is, I mean, what did he even do? Meaning, you know, like he did perform a miracle and water did come out of the rock. What does it mean he didn't have faith in God? What does it mean he didn't sanctify God's name? It's not clear what he did wrong, and even if he did something wrong, why it was so bad that he couldn't go into Israel. What makes it even less clear when you try to figure out what it was that Moshe did wrong, what makes it even worse is that when you look in Dvarim, I didn't put this here, but you look in Dvarim when Moshe is retelling the story, the beginning of Dvarim. One second. He tells them that Hashem didn't let him in because of them. Now I need to find the pasuk. Yeah, there we go. But right, he says, whatever it is, it's somewhere here. Right, he tells them that because of the Jews, I don't know where did I put it? Where is it? I didn't put it anywhere. It's somewhere here. Oh, there he is. Right. Okay. Paragalaf Pasuk Lamed Zayin. Right? It's after describing the Meraglim, he says, Gam bi hitanaf adonai biglalchem lemor gam ata lo tavosham. That God became angry with me because of you, because of the Meraglim, presumably, and said that I couldn't go into Israel. So, it's not just that reading this story, it's not clear what Moshe did that was so bad that made it that he couldn't go into Israel. It's also that Moshe himself tells you later on that that's not why he didn't go into Israel. The reason he didn't go into Israel was because of the Jewish people. So the combination of those two sort of main problems, those two main problems, right? Meaning all the problems from our parasha, which is, what did he do wrong at all? And even if he did something wrong, why was it so bad? Combined with the fact that Moshe's testimony in Devarim is that it wasn't this at all. It wasn't what they did at all. It wasn't what he did at all. It was them, is what led the Mepharshim to really try to figure it out. So, I mean, different Mepharshim, you know, I didn't put the primary sources from the Mepharshim. But they try to dig through basically every hint in the Psukim to figure out what it was that he did wrong. If we go back to the Psukim here, right, in Pasuk Chet, right, Rashi's position is that what he did wrong was that God had told him
to talk,
right? This is Rashi's, and he hit, right? And that's what he says in Chet, right? Kacharam atev akel reida atav ranachicha v'dibartem elasel leinehem. He said, take the stick, but speak to the rock. So Rashi tells you in Pasuk, you'd bet, l'hakti sheni, she'ilu dibartem elasel, if you had spoken to the rock, so then, then I would have been sanctified by the nation. If the rock, which can't speak, can't hear, doesn't need anything from God, listens to God, so much more we should. And there's trying to figure out exactly what Rashi means is complicated, But fine, Rashi thinks that what he did wrong was he hit the rock rather than speaking to the rock. Now, the Ramban, especially, but many in the Mepharshim don't like this, and the Ramban says, I don't understand. First of all, why would that be such a great sin? But more importantly, why are you taking it so literally? Why do you assume that dibartem el hasela means speak and don't hit? If he didn't want him to hit, why did he bring the rock? Why did he bring the stick in the first place? Right? Hashem goes out of his way to say, "Bring the stick." Now, within Rashi, many of the sort of modern commentaries have noted that the mateh throughout Chumash represents God. Right? It's Moshe will hit the water and split it with the staff that God gave him. Right? And the staff is always there to represent the fact that God is there, that Moshe represents God. So you need the stick to remind people, this is the stick that I used to perform the Makot, or something like that. But Ramban says, look, I mean, it's very hard to believe that what Rashi says is right. Because first of all, that's not such a great sin. And second of all, he had to bring the stick, so maybe God really wanted him to hit the stick. Now, some Mepharshim have a slight twist in this. The Rashbam in Svarno, for example, I just printed out. This is the summary of all the different approaches from Al HaTorah. You can go on if you want to see sort of the summary of all. This is what I was reading, you know, like at different parts during labor when like nothing was going on. I was like, I had it. It was like 50 pages just sitting there. But it's like very calm in that room. It's like quiet or is very calm, you know. And when there's blood and I have to look at something else, I had something to read. But this is just the summary. So Rashbam and Svarno take a twist on it and say, well, maybe it was that he was supposed to speak to the rock rather than hit it. But it's not just that he didn't listen to Hashem. The problem is maybe, right, in the Rashbam, the problem Rashbam wants to deal with is, besides for what the Ramban raises, is according to Rashi, how is this considered a lack of emunah? Right, the pasuk says that Moshe didn't have faith in God. Not listening to God is not the same as not having faith in God. So the Rashbam and Sfarno say maybe the problem was that Moshe hit the rock because he didn't, at some level, didn't believe God could bring water from the rock if he only spoke to it. And that's the problem. It's not that he didn't listen to God. That would have been, okay, you made a mistake. It was that he hit the rock because he thought that God, you know, at some level, he didn't have faith that God would be capable of bringing water from the rock, and he hit the rock because he thought that was somehow less miraculous, right? So it's a lack of faith. Lohemantem. The Ramban has a similar formulation and says it wasn't that he hit the rock, he was allowed to hit the rock, it was that he hit the rock twice. Right, which again, in the same direction, it was a lack of faith. He hit, you know, he hit it twice because he didn't really believe that it was going to happen the first time. But that's, you know, so you have sort of the Rashbam and the Ramban twists that it was really that Moshe didn't have faith, either because he hit instead of spoke or hit twice. You have Rashi who thinks that it was simply that he didn't listen to Hashem. And according to Rashi, lohem mantem bi, probably doesn't mean you didn't believe in me. It means more like you didn't cause others to have faith in me or something like that. Now, Mendelssohn has an interesting formulation here, and he says, no, it wasn't the problem he locates earlier. The lack of faith wasn't in the hitting of the rock. The lack of the faith was that when the Jews came to complain, instead of saying, God will give you water, they run away, and they run to the Ol Moed, and they panic. And Mendelssohn says, oh, that was the problem. They should have had faith in God to stand up to the people rebelling and say, don't worry, God will take care of you. Instead, they run away to Ol Moed in fear, and then God has to sort of bring them back. And he says the lack of faith was that they didn't, you know, after all these years of standing up to the Jews, they still, you know, they instead of the proactive Moshe we saw in the Korach stories, he just panics. Now there are other mafarshim. The Rambam focuses on the angriness, right? The angriness, that he yelled at them and he said that, you know, you are rebels. And that's what he says the problem is. Now, many of the Mepharshim don't like this, because they say that's not what the Pasuk says. The Pasuk says that their sin was lohemantim bi, that he didn't have faith in God. Why is that? Where do you get that from? The fact that he was angry, that shimunah hamorim. Now, it's possible that the Rambam is influenced by Dvarim, where in Dvarim it sounds like it's something the people did wrong, but still, that wouldn't be here. This would be at the Meraglim. But that's the Rambam's position, focusing on the anger. Rashi, again, following the Midrash, focuses on the fact that it was lakti sheni, that there was a lack in his ability to sanctify God's name because of the hitting rather than speaking. Other Mefarshim, Reza B'Chorshor, Moshe Ibn Chikatila, suggest that the lack of faith wasn't the hitting of the rock, but was the formulation of Hamin Hasela Hazet Notzila Chem Mayim. That he says, from this rock, we will bring forth water. Or alternatively, they said, Hamin Hasela Hazet was interpreted by the people as if Moshe doubted it. Right? Hamin Hasela Hazet, you know, can I bring water out of this rock? Is it possible? And that was the lack of Kiddush Hashem, that they made it sound like they doubted that God could bring water for it. Rabbi Yosef Albo says that the problem was that Moshe didn't show initiative, that everything in this whole story, he just capitulates at everything, and he never just stands up for himself. And that causes a lack of faith, because it caused a lack of faith in prophecy, right? If Moshe doesn't know how to solve it and he has to go back to Ol Moed and get new instructions, that causes people to doubt the independence of the prophetic role of Moshe. Let me make sure I don't forget any of the impressions. Yeah, the Rambam, anger, Reza ben Kaspi, anger, okay, anger. Then there are a series of Mepharshim. Well, you know, okay, we'll come back to this in a minute. So, but, I mean, basically, you know, the Mepharshim really, really struggle here. And again, so you have these Mepharshim who think that the problem was that really they lacked their own faith, and that's why they hit it twice, or they hit rather than spoke, or they failed to have the people have enough faith because they hit rather than spoke, or because they ran to the Ol Moed rather than being confident that they would be successful, or you have the Rambam's view that the problem isn't about their faith in God, but it's their anger towards the people, which again causes the problem because the Pasuk says that it was a lack of faith. Now, then there's a whole group of Mepharshim, and this is one of the positions in the Tanhuma, and it's favored by the Abarbanel and the Ho'il Moshe, and one of the options in the Ralbag, which is that they didn't really get punished for this at all. They were really punished for other sins. They were really punished for other sins, and this was just the pretext that God gave to not let them into Israel. Because he didn't want it to say you're not going in for more embarrassing reasons. Specifically, they highlight the fact that maybe Aaron didn't get to go into Israel because of the Egel, right? Because of his involvement in the Egel, because he built the Egel, and Moshe didn't get to go in because, as he says in Devarim, the entire generation was doomed to death by the Meraglim, and you know Moshe. Was part of that that generation. He even, sent the spies, right? And there the Mepharshim say, no, maybe it was that really Moshe wasn't allowed in as part of the Meraglim, like it says in Devarim, because he sent the Meraglim. It's just embarrassing because he made a small mistake. He sent the Meraglim thinking it would be innocuous. It turns out it was a disaster. Now, that still means that when the entire generation is doomed to death, he doesn't get a reprieve from that sentence because he doesn't deserve a reprieve because he was responsible. But it would be embarrassing for Hashem to say, hey, you were involved in the Meraglim. It's not real. I mean, he was involved in the Meraglim, but not in the same way, so Hashem finds a pretext. But there's this whole sort of view in the Midrash and some of the Mepharshim to say that, you know what? The answer to all these questions is that the reason it doesn't sound like it makes sense is because it doesn't make sense. Hashem is giving a pretext. Hashem wants to hide Moshe and Aaron's real punishment. And so he says, you know, he pretends. You know, it's the Midrash, his perspective is that Hashem wants us to read the Torah and feel like, you know what, Moshe and Aaron are really perfect. And they're so perfect that when they make a small mistake, so Hashem doesn't let them into Israel, and we're sort of supposed to commiserate with Moshe and Aaron and say, oh, you know, they were such great people. I can't imagine being so great that Hashem holds me to such standards. But in fact, that wasn't what was going on at all. And really, they were being punished for much more serious crimes, the Meraglim and the Egel. But, you know, the perspective that I like taking on this story, which has been taken by a lot of people, but all I would add is that I think it doesn't contradict the other ones, is to say that really, 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 really what it came down to is that the reason Moshe doesn't go in to Israel with the nation is because he's not the right leader anymore. Right? He's not the right leader anymore for the nation because he's 40 years later. He's 40 years later and he's out of sync with the nation. And to prove that, if we go back to the story, at first glance, right, it sounds like this story is really a redo of what used to happen. So much so that you read what they say in Pasuk Gimel, V'lu gavanu b'gva achenu lifnei Hashem, if only we had perished with our brothers before God. Now, I don't think that's accidental that they use that language. Because if you look at number two, I put it, this was the last words we heard of the first generation. When the first generation died, the last words we hear from them is here at Pasuk Chav Zayin. Vayom Rubnei Yisrael Moshe Lemor, Hein Gavanu Avadnu Kuladnu Avadnu. We have, right, it's not that normal word of died, it's Gavanu. Had we, expired. The last words we hear from the last generation is Gavanu. And I think what they're saying is, if only we had died with the last people of the last generation rather than the new generation, it would have been great. And I think that what happened was Moshe heard that, right? And Moshe thinks this is deja vu, right? As I've gone through 40 years, I had all the trouble at the beginning of Bamidbar. I thought we've killed, like, God killed off the entire generation. It's going to be okay now. You know, I mean, it's not okay, but we're not going to face the same problems. And then here they come and they say, Velu Gavanu. Right? If only we had perished with them, which I assume Moshe hears, and it's probably what they meant, which is, if only we had died with the people at the last crime. You know, everyone died back then. If only we had died with them. But you read the next pasuk, the next two pasukim, and suddenly you realize that it's not quite the same. I mean, yes, they're complaining about water, and yes, they're saying, let's die here. And then they say, they say, why'd you bring us into the desert to die, us and our animals? And that sounds vaguely familiar, right? Why are you taking us to die here? And why did you take us out of Mitzrayim? And again, this is, you know, Moshe has got to be panicking, right? It's 40 years later, and they're saying, why did you take us out of Egypt? That's what Datan Aviram said, that's what they said in Meraglim. Lavio tanu makom haraze. But then there's a slight hint that things change, which is they say, lo mikom zera uteina vegefen v'rimon, umayim ein l'shtot. Because you didn't bring us to a place of seeds and of figs and grapes and of pomegranates, and there's no water. Now that pasuk sounds very similar to what we had in the Meraglim but it's really actually very, very different. Because what happened the last time? What happened when the Jews complained last time? They said, why did you bring us out of Egypt? And what were their next words?
They remembered Egypt.
Oh. Yeah, they said, we remember how good things were in Egypt. You know what? We should have stayed in Egypt. You know what? Let's go back to Egypt. And what does this nation say? Why did you bring us out of Egypt to die here and not bring us to a place with Zera Teina Geffen Rimon? Now, anybody who knows anything about the description of Eretz Yisrael knows that, what do they mean? Zera Teina Geffen Rimon, right? They're starting to list off the Shivat Aminim. What they're saying is, why didn't you bring us to Israel? Which means that as much as they sound like the first generation, it's a world of a difference. Because they're turning to Moshe. The first generation, when they complained, they said, I'd rather turn back the clock. What are they really saying? They're saying, why'd you bring us out of Egypt and you haven't brought us to Israel yet? Instead, we're stuck in the desert with water. But they're forward-facing, right? They're not saying, why'd you bring us to Egypt, out of Egypt to the desert? Let's go back to Egypt. They're saying, why'd you bring us out of Egypt to the desert and not to Israel yet? And even though they're complaining, it's a very different type of complaint because they don't remember Egypt. They weren't in Egypt. It wouldn't even make sense for them to say, well, we remember Egypt. We don't remember Egypt. When they invoke Egypt, it doesn't sound like what they're saying is, we want to go back to Egypt. They're saying, they're just historically, they're saying, why'd you bring us out of Egypt to the desert? And why haven't you brought us to Israel if we're now dying of drought here in the desert? But the implication is, just bring us to Israel, which is a world of a difference. They are forward-facing rather than backwards-facing. But instead, what does Moshe get? Right? What should, if someone's listening carefully, what should the response have been? Right? The response should have been, Moshe should have said, you know, we'll deal with the water question, but don't worry, we are going. We're going there. We're done. We're 40 years in. Instead, he says, Shimuna Amorim. He lashes out at them and says, you rebels. Now, what I think that, you know, what he's getting at or what is going through his mind is, this is the same people who've been rebelling for 40 years. But the truth is that that's a mistake. As far as the Torah tells us, they've never rebelled ever. This is a new generation. It's the first time they've complained. In fact, it's nice to say, well, why don't they remember that 40 years ago, God gave them magic water in the desert, and he can just do it again. But the truth is, they never saw that. They were born, right? If they were, unless they're very, very old, which there could be people who were over 60, you know, at the beginning, so now they're close to 100. So maybe there were a few people. But the majority of people we're talking about were people who were children or not even born the first time around. They grew up in the desert. All they ever knew was the magic water source, and then their magic water source is cut off in the middle of the desert. When they panic and they ask Moshe for water, it's not like you can hold them accountable and say, well, don't you remember last time we didn't have water and God gave us water from the rock? No, they probably don't remember that. Right? They were either children or not born the last time this happened. All they have ever known is that they've been traveling through a desert constantly. Their parents told them, we left Egypt and now we're wandering through the desert for 40 years, but eventually we'll get to Israel. But all the entire existence they know is this miraculous existence, and then God says, and then suddenly they don't have water, and they say to Moshe, what is this? What are we stuck in this desert for if you haven't brought us into Israel yet, and we don't have any water? And Moshe reacts to them as if they were their fathers, right? As if they were the people who had seen all the miracles and had complained all those times before. But they aren't, right? So many, especially modern commentaries, have said the real problem wasn't per se their sin. Now, to tweak it, right? I'm not thrilled with saying that all the Mefarshim are wrong, right? What I think is right is that all the Mefarshim are touching on different aspects of the same problem. Because all the answers the Mefarshim give, in and of themselves, seem very problematic. I mean, like the Rambam saying that he yelled at them and said, oh, you rebels. As the Ramban asked on the Rambam, what's wrong with Hashem, with them saying, you rebels? It's not like Hashem didn't punish the Jewish people, didn't punish Moshe for calling out Korach, or Datam and Aviram. They were rebels. He got angry. He got very angry. And Hashem was totally fine with Moshe's anger. In fact, he listened to Moshe and he had the earth swallow up Korach. Why is it bad that he gets angry? So he gets angry. They deserve, right? They were complaining. So he got angry. And I think the answer is no. It was the anger that blinded him to the fact that it wasn't quite right. He's calling them rebels as if they've been rebelling the entire time, but they haven't. This is a different generation. Or the claim that they panic, right? That the real problem was that they panicked and that they ran back to Ohel Moed and they didn't assert themselves. But why didn't they assert themselves, right? Moshe 40 years ago was a confident leader, and it seems to be like, oh, this happens again, and he panics, and he can't do it. He can't reassert himself. But why not? Right, it's a new generation. Suddenly he doesn't have the confidence he had in the Korach story to say, you know, I represent God. And even the first time around, right, when in Bishalach, when there wasn't water, right, if you look back in the first time there isn't water. He just turns to, right, he just davens to God, right? Vayitzak El Hashem, right? They ask for water, he davens to God. There's not this, like, collapsing at the Ohel Moed, right? He just davens, he expects, right? They complain to him, so he says, God, give me something. And here, 40 years later, it sounds like either he's just, you know, he sounds like he's giving up, right? Why didn't he just say, I don't know, you know, either he could have said, I'm going to perform a miracle, or even not. Why didn't he just daven? Why is he throwing himself down? Why is he giving up? Well, it sounds like at some level he's just been worn down. He hasn't sung in that he's talking about a different generation. Now, how do you read Devarim into this? So the way I've always read Devarim is that that's really what Moshe's saying. Moshe says, look, I know I sinned at Meh Meriva, but you want to know the real reason I didn't get to go into Israel? It's because of the Meraglim. I mean, because of the Meraglim, I was the proper leader for generation one, but I'm not the proper generation for generation two. So because of the Meraglim, I ended up with a different generation. And because it was a different generation, I messed up. Now, the real reason, right, the proximate cause, the reason God said you can't go in is because he messed up at Meriva. But why did he mess up in Meriva? He messed up in Meriva because of Meraglim, he ended up being the 120-year-old leader of 20-year-olds, right, who hadn't grown up with them and was trying to speak their language, but he's, right, and in that sense, it really is the Jews' fault. Right? It's the Jews' fault that the generation that should have gone in, for whom Moshe was the proper leader, are no longer around, and therefore he's stuck leading 20-year-olds and 30-year-olds who are, you know, a third his age, haven't experienced anything that he experienced, right? This is like, you know, it was like the pre-war, post-war problems, right? When, like, you know, all the stories they still tell in YU of, like, the Rosh Yeshiva, who only spoke Yiddish, had gone through a Holocaust, expected, you know, European standards in trying to relate to the American students who, you know, only spoke English, you know, focused on baseball and basketball and, you know, and had lived a basically charmed life in America. And they just didn't understand the worldview. And they couldn't communicate, right? The reason Moshe ends up in a sort of terrible situation like that is actually not his fault. It's actually their fault. Now, there are several Mefarshim who really do say that in different ways, that the reason Moshe is punished is because of his faulty leadership here. Some of the Mefarshim say that it was that Moshe appeared cowardly, right? That he runs away from the people and doesn't stand up to them. But again, that may be part of the same thing, right? That Moshe no longer, right? The last time we met him, he could stand up to them. But now he doesn't anymore. It may be that the reason, and this is, you know, and this may be, you know, this is brought down by the Avat Nefesh, which is a Perush on, which is it's one of the Perushim, like on the Ibn Ezra. The Nitziv has a very sort of unique interpretation of this story, which is that Moshe was supposed to teach the Jewish people how to deal with drought without open miracle, without sort of the classic miracles. He wasn't supposed to really speak to it. He was supposed to he was supposed to teach them how to daven, how to learn, how to maybe find water in a natural way. And Moshe just assumed he was supposed to perform a miracle like he always did. But God wanted him to, you know, bring the people in, right, to his conversation, lead them in instead of doing it himself like he'd always done. But he doesn't, because he didn't realize, right, it's 40 years later, but he's still acting like he did 40 years before. So, you know, when you... you know, and what all these sort of point to is that it may be that the tragedy of this story, right, is not just the specifics of what did Moshe do, right? Is, you know, Moshe got angry when he shouldn't have got angry, or he was supposed to hit the rock, sorry, beat the rock and rather hit the rock, so he didn't listen to God, or he didn't have faith in God and he didn't really believe that God was going to bring the water out by speaking, so he had to hit it, or whatever it's going to be. All those things, I think, point to what I think is the most compelling answer, is that the bigger story going on, as Moshe says in Devarim, is the real reason he doesn't go in, is because of them. But the way I would interpret it, right, is not the way, like, the Tanchuma does and the Abarbanel does, which is that really, 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 God is punishing him for the Meraglim, and he's really, really, really punishing Aaron for the Chet Egel and just covering their sins. The reason he gets angry, the reason he's cowardly, the reason he makes mistakes is because he's, you know, he's out of his element at this point. It's 40 years later, he doesn't really relate to them, and, you know, That's really why you get angry, right? You get angry when you get frustrated. You panic when you get frustrated when you don't really know how to deal with it anymore. And as great as Moshe was, he's dealing with the children. He's not dealing with the people he grew up with, but he's still acting as if he is. He doesn't hear the different intonations in their voice. He doesn't say to them, he doesn't realize that at some level, they are at a different state than the people were 40 years ago. Because yes, they're complaining, and yes, they're panicking, and maybe they don't believe in God enough, but they're... go-to complaint isn't, should we go back to Egypt? Their go-to complaint is, why haven't you brought us into Israel yet? Right? And that's a world of a difference that Moshe could have worked with if he'd heard it. But at some level, he doesn't hear it. I put it here, right, in 7, right? The same psukim, right, that the last time this happened, right, the difference is so striking. If only we had died in Mitzrayim, right, which they don't say, right? They never say it would be better to die in Mitzrayim. They say we'd rather die with our brothers who died in the desert, right? Meaning the previous generation said we'd rather die in the desert than here. They say we'd rather die earlier in the desert than die now in the desert. Right? That's very different. They said we'd rather die in a magic fire that comes down from heaven than the slow, painful death of drought, of dying of thirst. Right? But their starting point is the desert, and then they say, it would be better to go back to Egypt. They never said that. They just said, we'd rather have died a quick, painless death in the desert then a painful death in the desert. It'd be better to go to Israel. But the difference between saying we'd rather not die in the desert, bring us back to Egypt, than saying we'd rather die a painless death in the desert than a painful death in the desert, bring us to Israel. Moshe should have heard that as much as it sounds the same, it doesn't, right? And, you know, in 8, when Dasan and Aviram turn to Moshe, they say, they said to Moshe, why did you bring us out of the land of Eretz Zavat Chalav Udvash to die here? And af lo el Eretz Zavat Chalav Udvash aviyotanu, you didn't bring us to the land flowing of milk and honey. But they call Egypt their land of milk and honey, right? They say, you took us out of our milk and honey without giving us a replacement. The people here totally recognize that Israel is the only place with milk and honey. They, right, their only experience is desert or Israel, not Egypt. Right? They really are psychologically different places, and Moshe doesn't really relate to that. Additionally, I think there's even more to this. The sin, when they say we'd rather die when our brothers died, if we actually go back to that story, that story is actually quite telling, because the last sin that we hear of is the Jews complaining again that Hashem had caused the people to die, and so they do the test of the twelve sticks, and at some point the people say, we're all going to die. Why? Because anyone who comes close to the Mishkan dies. I mean, if you come too close to the Mishkan and you have that too intense exposure to God, then you die. Now, it could be that all the Jews were saying was, if only we had died the quick death of fire coming from heaven or whatever, or the plague, that would have been better. But I think it might be slightly different. When the last time this word gavana was used, the people were complaining that being too close to God can kill you. I think the people might have been saying something else, not just, we want to go into Eretz Israel. What they're saying is, we would rather have died from an intensity of God's presence than the lack of it. Right? The last time people died, why were they panicking? They say, we're expiring. Why are we expiring? Because we went into the Mishkan unannounced, and God's presence in the Mishkan is so intense that if you're not supposed to be there, you would die. And they said, well, here we are in the desert without water. Now, what does being in the desert without water represent? So if you look back in Beshalach, right, we've done this, but the last time they didn't have water, did I put it here? yeah, right, number five. They had said to God, when they didn't have water, they had, the pasuk says, "Vayikrashem makom masam rival riv bnei Yisrael nasotem et Hashem lemor hayesh Hashem bekirbeinu amayin." When Hashem characterizes what they were really complaining about when they didn't have water, was that they didn't believe that God was among them. Right? Their claim was, we don't have water. But they really meant was, if we don't have water, it must be that God abandoned us. I mean, not having water is symbolic of the fact that God has left you to die in the desert. But if that's true, then what the people may have been saying is, we have two options. We're going to die now without water, but dying without water means that God's abandoned us here. Our forefathers died not because God abandoned them, but because God was present in an intense form, and they just didn't deserve that. So they were overwhelmed by God's presence. We would rather have died with it because of an over-intensity of God's presence than the lack of God's presence. Now, if that's what they're saying, that's a very, again, that's a, they're complaining, that's bad, but it's a, there's a certain positive spin on that, which they're saying, look, we don't have water, maybe that means God abandoned us. We'd much rather die in the world where every time you transgressed God, God smote you down, but at least you knew that God was there, than to die sort of anticlimactically at the end because God has decided not to bring us into Israel and just leave us to die at the end of this journey. But if that's the case, that when Moshe is hearing, is a nation, not one who wants to go back to Mitzrayim, who just says to Moshe, look, we don't want to die in the desert for two reasons. One, we don't want to die in the... Well, three reasons. We don't want to die. Fine. That's obvious. But two, we don't want to be here, but we don't want to go back to Egypt. We want to go forward. Isn't it time? And three, they're saying we don't want to die feeling like we're abandoned by God. We'd rather die with the generation that at least knew God was present. Which, for all its negativity, if someone comes to you and says, I'm dying of thirst, can't God be among us, even if that means death, but don't abandon us. But ideally, I'd like to be in the land that God promised us. Can't we move to that already? If you listen closely and you hear those intonations, you hear those implications, that's something you can work with. But I think what all the answer of the Mefarshim point to is that Moshe didn't hear it. Because Moshe, it's not the people he grew up with. He's not the people he's been leading for years, the next generation. So all he hears is their parents. And he gets angry and he calls them Hamorim, you rebels. But they're not really the rebels. It's the first time they've ever rebelled. But in Moshe's mind, they're just their forefathers. They're just their father, their parents who died in, because he's still a generation earlier. And he doesn't react properly. He panics with them because he thinks, oh God, it's 40 years and nothing has changed. But that cowardice isn't just cowardice. It's a lack of recognition that something indeed has changed. You can work with these people. It's much harder to work with someone who says, I want to go back to Egypt, than someone who says, just bring me to Israel already. But if you panic, it's not just a local problem. You're not being a strong enough leader. It's an indication that you view this as the culmination of 40 years of frustration rather than a fresh start. And that's why I think the, you know, like I said, my sort of, the way I'm always partial to here is to view the fundamental problem in light of what it says in Devarim, that Moshe says the real reason that I didn't go into Israel was because of the Meraglim. Not because of my involvement in the Meraglim, but because there was a sin in the Meraglim, which meant that my generation died. And that meant that when the second generation came and they complained again, I missed it. I missed the change between the children and the parents. And I got angry and I gave up and I lost faith and I lost confidence and I got confused. Whatever it was, I didn't listen to God as he said it because I got caught up emotionally and psychologically in what happened 38 years before and I hadn't quite moved on. And it was that time lapse that caused me to make that mistake. That mistake wasn't the reason I didn't go in. That mistake was symptomatic of the bigger problem, which was, this isn't my people, right? These aren't the people that I grew up with, that I'm ready. I mean, they are my people. They're not the people, they're not my comrades, they're not my colleagues, right? These are the next generation. I don't speak the same language. So I missed it, and I messed up. But I think that's the, you know, that, you know, that is the way I, you know, read this story, that the that's really the problem, that all the other answers suggesting the Mefarshim are all symptoms of the bigger issue that Moshe is saying, because of the Meraglim, because we've gone through 40 years and I'm dealing with a new generation, I missed it, I didn't hear it, I didn't know how to react to them, I didn't know how to deal with them in the proper way. And therefore Hashem says, okay, you know, not really as a punishment per se, but as a reality. If you can't deal with them, you're not the right leader, so then someone else has to take it. And we'll see that again, you know, as we go on, that that a lot of sort of the closing stories that we have with Moshe are about this, about Moshe struggling with this new generation and trying to really find his place with them and what messages he can leave them with, even though he's really from a throwback generation. Now, it's not fully fair to Moshe, because Hashem really does let him bring them all the way up to it. He doesn't kick him out. He slowly phases him out and gets his student to take over for him, because, you know, if this pshat is right, that Moshe is not really being punished, just that he's being phased out because it's necessary, it makes sense. Moshe will allow him to finish, Hashem allows him to finish his task and allows him to be there and have a leader who represents his journey and his, you know, mission in life, his legacy, but just relates better to the next generation than he does. Okay, and that's what we'll continue with, and we'll see sort of the end of, as we sort of run through the end of Bamidbar.